Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
I do better with an audience.
I do better with an audience.
Hello. Going on. It's your girl, Karina Reichman, here, thrilled to be back with yet another episode of Inappropriate Happiness, and I am joined here today in a very unique and spectacular space that we are recording the podcast in today, actually, with my mainest dude, Isaac Sloan. Iboogs, what the hell's going on?
You know, Karina, we have been in disparate places doing different things. And to contain this podcast, we needed to come to this Dolby Atmos room in this studio with two of the more interesting people we've ever met watching us record this podcast.
The scrutiny is so loud. I think I do better with an audience at all times. I honestly wish there was an audience watching me do everything all the time, which is probably something we can explore in psychoanalysis. But let me tell you, it's great to be here, Isaac. We are here at Kensaltown East, Studio of the Gods, here on Irving Place in New York City. And within Kensaltown East, we are in the very special Dolby Atmos room with, I would call him the king of Dolby Atmos. His name's Von Merrick. Hey, Von, how you doing?
Hello.
He's waving, you know, you can't, it's not a visual medium here in podcast world, but Von very graciously is allowing us to take a good half hour out of his day to record in this very excellently sound-treated, acoustically sound room where he, like, does the craziest shit of all time. Spatial audio, existing within a space, musically. He has a whole map of creativity that he created. That's a whole other conversation. We should really have him on the pod instead of just spectating us, but feels great. And then my right-hand guy, my other limb, my second appendage, the brain, other than you, Isaac, nobody really understands what I'm going to say next. Quite like Gabe Monroe over here, my producer, my pal. Fucking absolutely next level. And this feels amazing because I, as everyone in this room sort of knows, I've sort of been on the lam for a month here, meaning touring in a rock band or two, and, you know, all up and down the West Coast, followed by three very hazy days at home, followed by a trip to Suwannee Hulaween, a festival attended by 40,000 lunatics in the swamps of Florida, followed by a trip to the city of brotherly love the very next morning for yet another event. I mean, it never gets old, Isaac. And then, of course, followed by a 14-hour sleep, followed by two Ween shows that I miraculously made it to despite my absolute delirium. And now here we are. So it's just an absolute pleasure. The days keep getting crazier, but they're really phenomenal, and I'm just so stoked to be in any room to shoot the shit with you, specifically this one.
Likewise. And while we have a fabulous in-studio audience today, I want to hear about what it was like on the ground at Swanee Hulaween.
I mean, Hulaween, let me tell you guys, there are a few festivals. I feel like, you know, this festival gets a lot of praise, and it deserves every amount of praise that it gets. It's really, I've never been to this Electric Forest, which is very widely praised for its sort of environs and set up in terms of neon forests and, you know, lunatics hanging from the trees and art installations and immersive, you know, craziness. But whatever they're doing over there, I can only imagine that Hulaween trumps it. I mean, Hulaween is so next level in terms of what it looks like down there, what it feels like down there. You're just so sort of, I would say, disconnected from society. As a like, I play a lot of hippie festivals, a lot of festivals in general, where, you know, you still sort of have some sort of tether to the true and the real and the concrete and the whatever may be, but you are sort of in a suspended place when you go down to the spirit of the Suwannee State Park. It's a very sacred ground, and there's, you know, incredible Spanish moss, just the natural environs. It's beautiful down there. There is a black river that runs through it with white sand, like crazy shit. Of course, my dear, shout out to my dear friend Dalton Muse for being one of the finest men on a golf cart to ever exist. My buddy, who actually is the production manager at Soul Kitchen, a phenomenal venue in Mobile, Alabama, saw that I was playing and gave me a holler and said, "Karina, yeah, I'm down here working production. You need me to pick you up on my golf cart?" I was like, "Yes, I do, because we need a tour immediately." And it was really, I mean, there's not much you can say other than it is a phenomenal place, a sort of incredibly special place. And people treat it as such, man. They go absolutely crazy down there. And I was thrilled to play at 3:15 on the Hallows stage, which is a new stage since 2019. This, by the way, I have played this festival 5 times.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
It is my most played festival of any festival, which I honestly couldn't even believe. And 5.5 times, if you count, there was a festival that they held on the grounds there called the Resonate Festival that I played in 2021. Which was different, but still, I have been to the spirit of the Suwannee State Park to play music 6 times, which is a shocking statistic. 3 times with Marco, 3 times with my band, if you count Resonate. So three Hulaweens with Marco, and now 2 Hulaweens with my band. Phenomenal stuff. My set was plagued with some very unfortunate technical difficulties, which, you know, you just don't love to see. I blew up the bass rig during my song City Kids. I was going absolutely ham.
You've been known to do that. That's not the first time.
No, because you can't contain this much fire in tubes and speakers. Do you know what I'm trying to say? You just can't contain it.
There was also someone who, I guess, produced one of your tracks before Gabe was your main man, who said something like, "Karina, I see, you know, exploring the low end, you know, again," or something like that. That's, and that was the last time you worked with that person.
That's it. That person has been fired. Yeah, absolutely. Because Gabe over here, who is sitting across from us, Gabe understands the value of the low end. And Von Merrick over here, how many Grammys do you have, Von?
2.
2-time Grammy winner Von Merrick, do you understand the value of the low end?
I hope so.
He says, "I hope so." You're hired, my guy. Yeah, you know, I've been known to really crank up the low in perhaps an off-putting way to some, but, you know, I just keep going back to bass as the place. And yeah, it was definitely demoralizing at the time when the people had to come and bring on an entire new bass head. And I had my comrades, Adam November and Chris Corsico, my bandmates, you know, continuing to jam in the middle of this portion, you know, while they were going after it. And I was just standing there like, you know, dumbfounded that this had happened. And, you know, it was about maybe 8 minutes, but felt like an eternity, as sure. would happen. You sure. know, maybe it was more like three, but felt like eight, but felt like an eternity, you know. So that was an unfortunate thing all around. And, you know, you just in those moments, you gotta get through it, and you just gotta pretend like it's not happening and try to handle it with grace, which I always do. You can't control these things, except, you know, you hope for better next time. But they had a wonderful crew, helped me out tremendously. It was all great. And we got to see some great music that day, Isaac. I mean, we were only there for a day, but we saw the great David Shaw on our stage, the great Margot Price, the great Liz Cooper. We saw Portugal the Man headline. We saw two sets of the String Cheese Incident. I mean, the party just don't stop. It's unbelievable. And we stayed a good 12 hours at the festival upon flying in morning of, which also we cut it extraordinarily close. Extraordinarily. Which I knew would be the case. We were flying by the seat of our pants. And, you know, you fly to Jacksonville, you rent a car, you drive for 90 minutes, you show up an hour before you're supposed to play. It's all just a miracle that anything happens, you know? But it did.
It sounds like you landed in a very good place. And I think there's something to it happening at the end of October that's very different. It's not just a sort of standard summer festival season. Things are, you know, a little bit sideways to begin with. You know, this is a funny time to be, you know, doing something like that. And I really do hope to make it down there one year.
Honestly, I thought about you often. You'd love it so much. It's such a special, special place. And both my bandmates are, you know, they hold to the fact that it's their favorite festival. And, you know, I really get that. I really understand.
Do you know about this thing about daylight savings time?
I know that it exists and it can blow me. What else?
Well, I think there was some move to, like, banish it.
Thank God.
But then it's about to happen again.
Can we just do away with this?
I think there was, like, that was like a thing, right? I think they...
So next year, it'll be abolished. That'll be great
for me. That would be good.
Every time it comes around, it really makes me feel even more crazy than I usually feel with trying to go to bed at a reasonable hour and wake up at a reasonable hour, ones recognized by normal humans. You know, it just puts a whole wrench in my whole thing. And the darkness, what the fuck? Can we just go with what is? Why do we need this?
Well, on the subject of delirium and darkness.
Yes.
Let's talk about the two nights of Ween at the Beacon Theater.
My guy, great segue. Why are you so good? So, ladies and gentlemen... It's been a long road for your girl in October. I have seen some shit. I have been in some time zones. I have played many, many concerts to lovely, incredible people. And then made it home to tell the tale. And again, this, you know, finally make it home, sleep for 14 hours, wake up at about 3:30 p.m., get my life together, and realize that my favorite band in the world is playing my favorite venue in the world. Ween at the Beacon Theater. I mean, these are sort of hyperboles, but not really. You know what I mean? I'm not going to lie to you. These are sort of my favorite rooms and my favorite bands. So for me, Ween represents much more than the guys on stage playing the music, because without Ween, I would have no career. Because Ween reforming and taking Dave Drywitz, bassist of Ween, out of Marco Benevento's trio and back on the road with Ween gave me, and him putting me up to the job gave me everything, you know? And if it wasn't for that, I just, you know, think I'd be working a regular job and not living this incredible reality that's been kind of carved out over the last 6 years. So it's a very special thing to me to go see the band for that reason, because it holds very much, you know, weight and importance based on all of that. And we, like, I wasn't able to see Ween for the first bunch of years. Well, not true. But, you know, whenever there would be a conflict there, it'd be like, you know, there was a time in 2016 when I would sub for Dave Drywitz and Marco's band, and he would do the dates that he could do, but then would play Ween shows and whatever. So, like, by definition, if Ween was playing when Marco was playing, I had to go play with Marco and Dave had to go play with Ween. Anyway, all of that said, to culminate so many years later, the band is better than ever. more together than ever, more friendly to each other than ever, you know, because there have been many of years of turmoil with these guys who have literally been making music together since middle school. And they are, if not 50, they're in their 50s. They're all in their 50s. Unbelievable stuff. And, you know, Ween represents this sort of safe haven for these freaks and lunatics, of whom I am one. And people come together to listen to this music and bask in all spectrums of both emotion and music in a way that does it for me more than any other band. There is never going to be another band that does it in such high practice, and who writes songs that are so hysterical and yet so meaningful. And the people who tap into it and understand it, like myself and so many screaming, fervent fans, nothing else comes close. And it, like we've seen with Trey at the Beacon many times over the past few years, you know, a sing-along at the Beacon like that, where everyone knows every word to every song, and yet they played two nights where they play 36 songs a night. It's not like going to see Fish, you know, and you know, 36 unique songs a night. So over the course of the two nights, you're seeing so many cuts from so many catalog, you know, from such a huge catalog, rather. And, you know, and it's just, it was masterfully executed. Halloween was honestly maybe my favorite Ween show I've ever seen, except for the one where they came back in 2016 at the First Bank Center. And it was just, you know, that was the real culminating of it all for me personally, and them professionally, obviously. So I enjoyed the ever-loving fuck out of it, Isaac. It was absolutely spectacular. First night was much more of like sort of a greatest hits vibe, I would say, even though with many, many, many deep cuts and subversive, hilarious shit going on. But I will say the encore on night one, which was Birthday Boy, which really, I think Birthday Boy is one of the most beautiful songs ever written. Say it right now. Put it up there with absolutely anything that people hold in high regard. Birthday Boy into Spinal Meningitis, and then Homo Rainbow to close it all out. And everybody's singing their hearts out. It's a beautiful night of music. It was absolutely spectacular. I was able to bring my band, who had never seen Ween before, which is a big party foul on my part as the band leader. That just shouldn't be allowed. And we've covered plenty of Ween over the years, actually, but they'd never seen them. And then night two, I would hold as more of a, that was a fucking Ween show, you know what I mean? Like, sort of more subversive, more lunatic shit. They played Sucking on the Blood of the Devil's Dick. Very rarely heard, ever. Really fantastic. I mean, lost my absolutely ever-loving mind to that. And it was truly excellent, start to finish. And they'd never played the Beacon before. So, you know, may this start a new tradition for those guys, because they were all, by the way, they were so stoked to play there, which was so special. You know what I mean? Can you even imagine? Like, I can't, but to be those guys, and after this long, long, arduous career that began literally in middle school, you know, with so many records and a lot of trials and tribulations for them, you know, to be here and playing for ravenous audiences at the Beacon Theater, they were over the moon. So,
well, I'm delighted to hear about this and stoked for all involved.
So great.
I have to say, I had like a phase where I really enjoyed Ween, and then I had this kind of realization that, you know, Benedict Anderson has this idea that for communities to exist, they have to recognize themselves as a community, and then people outside the community need to recognize them as a community. And I was like, I'm one of the people on the outside of this Ween community that's like, I see you and I'm stoked for you and I feel a little bit outside of it, and that's totally great.
Sure.
So I'm pumped to hear about that and delighted that both
shows.
Oh, but
you and
so
I have
fantastic.
Rocked some Ween covers together in
That's
our day,
true.
My dude. You and I have played so many Ween songs together over the years.
Absolutely. No, and yeah. I love the songs. It's just the fervent knowing of the catalog.
Sure.
And the, you know, the way in which you're talking about a connection,
yeah,
with the music,
totally,
is something that I feel with other bands and feel really excited to know about in the Ween way.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Totally. Hurt.
Yeah.
I love it. I am such a huge fan. I, you know, it's funny. I think I feel like such a member of the community of life that I really don't love. Like, and of course, we talk so much about like these fan groups and things like that. You know what I mean? And this would be like a larger episode. But to me, like, I don't know. I feel like such a universalist that I don't. Like, I think almost to a fault, like, I shy away from even the word community, you know what I mean? Because I feel like broad strokes of, like, I recognize that, of course, there are these pockets and there are these, like, subs, like, groups and whatnot, but I like to participate in so many of them. It's just in a musical, you know, situation that I like, I'm like, nah, man, we're all one with vibration, all of us. You know what I mean? So, like, to me, I like to unpack that idea that there are these subsections and, like, microcosms and whatever and break it all down, man.
Well, I think it's just a kind of way of organizing it.
I think,
you know, it can be totally broken down or, you know, looked at, you know, either way.
In many ways, absolutely. Oh, my God. I just feel like, yeah, dude, we're all one with the vibrations, man. I got really out there at Ween, man. But that was phenomenal. And I'm glad to have lived to tell the tale, man. And now we're back at it. A lot of fun shit happened over Halloween weekend, though, Isaac.
It did. Yeah, no, it was fun to follow along.
Yeah.
And I think the one that caught both of our eyes, you know, we thought we should really talk about this, is, of course, Billy Strings Away from the Shire.
You can't have a podcast episode where you don't mention this guy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, these are three nights at the ExploreAsheville.com Arena in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yes. I mean, huge.
Huge. It was a J.R.R. Tolkien Lord of the Rings theme.
Because Billy has a song called Away from the Mire, but he dubbed this whole situation Away from the Shire. He put on some Bilbo Baggins ears and was straight up raging, crowd surfing with an electric guitar, Dwayne Trucks of Widespread Panic fame on drums.
Well, the thing that I felt most compelled by, and I don't really even understand this because I don't know Lord of the Rings very well, but apparently he tells the story of the Lord of the Rings trilogy over the three nights through songs, both his originals and some covers.
I mean, again, so much care and preparation and presentation put into this event.
And it also, like, it's one of those taking it seriously and not taking yourself so seriously, because you see videos of this and it's just like, what?
It's like, this motherfucker is Bilbo Baggins right now. Yeah, 100%. It's great. It's such a great example of that. And the musicianship was phenomenal. I saw, like, just crazy shit. And of course, you know, playing such choice covers. Do you have the set list pulled up? Do you remember some of this?
I do. No, I do have some of it pulled up. And I was really, you know, excited about the just the breadth of the different covers.
Right.
You know, I have all three nights right here. And starting, you know, you get, they sang Happy Birthday to Bilbo Baggins. There's just a Mildred J. Hill and Patty Hill cover, Happy Birthday to You.
Unbelievable shit.
But like Bill Monroe, of course, Midnight Rider, Allman Brothers, Wild Horses, Rolling Stones, and then his original sprinkled in here, All Along the Watchtower, you know, Bob Dylan song covered by many, Ring of Fire.
Dude.
Closing with Will the Circle Be Unbroken. I would really love to sit down with somebody who understands Lord of the Rings and get their whole take on all of this, but I've seen some of it written out. There's Pearl Jam covers the second night, Bela Fleck, he's covering Widespread Panic, two nights, Fishing on the 30th, and then All Time Low on the 31st, Big River, and then the Halloween night opens with Ramble On and The Wizard, Black Sabbath.
Dude, I would have lost my mind over this.
And then War Pigs, more Black Sabbath, and Battle of Evermore, more Zeppelin, Fearless, Pink Floyd, and, you know, also, by the way, you know, these shows are like 25 songs long, so he's sprinkling in his original music in here. And, you know,
so
I don't know. I don't know.
To see that band with drums.
Yeah, that's really cool,
is a
too.
Very, very special, cool thing. Yeah. Like, you know, and I'm often the guy who's like, man, like, you know, I love, you know, all for the bluegrass bands with no drummer, don't get me wrong, but nothing like a little backbeat for you. You know what I'm saying? So glad they had some auxiliary folks stepping in and making that like what appeared to be a real bacchanalia. If you were there, we salute you. And man, Billy, don't stop. Keep going.
Yeah, he just announced some initial tour dates for 2023.
All arenas.
Pretty much.
Like,
yeah.
Really wild shit that
like
has happened.
Like, stands.
Like, just, it's crazy. It's
totally
really
crazy.
So, fucking go, Billy. We love you. Unbelievable shit. And then our other favorite band.
Yeah, Widespread Panic playing two nights at in Savannah. We talked a little bit about it last week, but they did a Dreams show, which as a professional psychoanalyst really intrigues me. Some really great covers there too. Obviously Dreams by the Allman Brothers Band is a perfect fit for them, but also Enter Sandman.
Oh yeah,
they covered the Black Angels, they covered the band Sleep,
dude.
It seemed like they got out there as well.
Unbelievable. And just to see their outfits were so adorable and spectacular for the record. And this place was enormous. 10,000 seat arena, right? Something along those lines. And man, it really, everybody, it's great to see these bands doing the musical costume and just kind of creating a world for their fans to, you know, get something different. Halloween is, you know, such a jam band holiday or a music holiday, but the jam bands really put their whole back into that, you know, for the most part.
Although you could be in Italy seeing The Cure on Halloween.
Dude.
That happened.
That's pretty freaking sick.
Pretty sick.
You see? You don't have to be a jam band to play Halloween. That's spectacular. I can't even believe it. Well, we shout out those guys for really making it rain out there. I mean,
and, you know, everyone else.
Everyone else.
The list goes on. We hope you had a good Halloween weekend of live music.
Dude, we really do. We really do. And let me tell you, Isaac, we might have reached the end of our road here.
I think we should put a bow on it.
I think we should put a bow on it. Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast is brought to you by the Osiris Media Network. We are thrilled to be a part of this beautiful umbrella in which all the music podcasts get cranked out down your dome piece. You know what I'm saying. It's fantastic. We love these guys. RJB, thank you so much. Today, Gabe Simon, Gabe Monroe, if you will. He is our nasty producer, making us sound good with the SM7Bs. My man, Von Merrick, two-time Grammy winner, but really the Grammy winner of my heart. He is a phenomenal human, and he is the Dolby Atmos master. We're thrilled to be. I mean, let me tell you, if this were a visual cast, people wouldn't even believe where we are, because it is a beautiful room, so beautifully acoustically treated. Oh, Gabe's taking a photograph. Thank God. And, you know, we're just so stoked to be able to do this podcast from wherever, especially excellent places like these. So, my guy, Isaac, it has been so real to see you again.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Definitely.
I mean, we have been gone doing absolute crazy things across both the country and the globe. And I'm looking forward to next week.
I'm hoping our man Vaughn will break it down topographically for us.
Yeah, I am too. I think we can make it happen if we ask nicely. So that'll be great. And you guys, we hope you have an amazing week ahead. We hope you had a great Halloween. Keep it surreal. Don't do anything we wouldn't do. Short list. And we will see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Osiris. Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that, you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.